the Adolf Hitler smiled and he said, "The soul of Germany is not my concern, not yours." Once the World War II started, and during the Dead War, Hitler not only destroyed the synagogue of Jewish people, he also destroyed the Protestant as well as the Catholic. Those pastors should have gotten on their knees and prayed to the Lord about this situation. But they chose to be complacent. They chose to do nothing. By doing nothing, evil got the best of it. Let me put it in our term. We have a three president candidate: Barack Hussein Obama. By the way, he said he has nothing to do with Islam, but he has a three Muslim name. And Hillary Clinton and her wife, Bill, John McCain. And when I compare this people's agenda with against what the Bible says, I don't find any one of them considered as a true biblical leaders. When I say that, I didn't pick any party, so I'm perfectly okay. In the meanwhile, according to intelligence that comes from the Israel Transportation Minister, his name is Shaul Mofez. He just mentioned this thing, I quote, "Iran is going to have their first nuclear weapon in their arsenal this year." This year. Now they are concentrating uranium enough to do weapon grade so they can have a weapon, atomic weapon. It's not only for them to use it against Israel. They have enough nuclear plutonium to build 24 bombs. How many bombs atomic bombs needed for the Israel to go? One or two. What are they going to do with the rest of them? Just give a wild guess. What would be the main target? Yesterday, May 7th, Russian President, probably I'm going to butcher his name, Vladimir Putin, hand over his reign of presidency to the Dmitry Medvedev. You guys know him well, but you've never seen him. This guy, I've never seen him either. Yeah, whatever, Gesundheit. Anyway, he's a law professor whom Putin handpicked and personally anointed to take his place as a president. In turn, Putin took the position as a prime minister. Seems like Putin is giving up that massive power he had in Russia, all of a sudden stepping back and stepping out of the limelight of the political power in Russia. What's going on? This man, in my opinion, is a puppet. He's a puppet. He's going to do what Putin says. Putin said, I quote, he plans ascending to the role of prime minister in the past that has been a less powerful position. But in Putin's hand, it would become a vastly more powerful role, and Putin seems intent on fashioning himself as the new czar of Russia. He is centralizing the power and wealth onto himself. He's silencing the political and the religious opposition. He's rebuilding offensive capabilities of the Russian military, and he seems to be itching for the military adventure of some kind. Just keep that in mind, some sort of a military adventure. An opportunity to show the Russia's new might and reclaim the glory of Mother Russia. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Gog and Magog is positioning himself according to Ezekiel 38 and 39. So what's that got to do with the tonight's study? Everything. While the political landscape is changing rapidly, while the time we are allowed to use on this earth is fading away in front of us fast, what are we doing in America, born again Christians? What are we doing? What does God want us to do? Let's learn this kind thing from the Lord through two people tonight, Mordecai and Esther. So we'll start at the chapter 4 of verse 1 and Esther. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on the sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. I'm sorry, I missed this line. And in front of the king's gate. For no one might enter the king's gate clothed with a sackcloth. Verse 3. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was a great mourning among the Jews, with a fasting, weeping, wailing, and many lay in the sackcloth and ashes. In the empire, I find five different responses happening between end of chapter 3 and here for these three verses. Let's go back to the last verse of chapter 3, verse 15. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in the Shushan, the citadel. So the king and the Haman sat down to drink, but the city of the Shushan was perplexed. There's two different responses. One is this: Haman and the king completely ignored the condition of the Jews and sat down and for the drunken stupor, royal drunken stupor. You don't need to write down because we're going to go over this again. Second response we find at the end of the verse 15, city of Shushan was perplexed. They didn't know what to do. So note the word first one says they didn't care. Second response, they didn't know what to do. Okay? Third response we find in verse 1 through 3 is secluded in the royal palace. The queen we are going to find out from verse 4, she had no idea what's going on. She was secluded. So she didn't know anything about it, the danger that she and her people faced. Fourth response I find is the Jews in the various provinces began to fast and mourn. And fifth response is only one man, Mordecai, was able to do anything about the horror, and he immediately began to act. With that in mind, I must say this to you. We cannot be neutral when the human lives are at stake. We cannot be neutral when the human lives are at stake. That's why we not only must pray to the Lord first, but also we must voice our opinion with the petitions and vote regarding abortion and our children's education. I received a DVD a couple days ago from my colleague. His name is Jack Hip. He has a big church in Calvary, name called Calvary Chapel, Chino Hill. Any of you guys know? Jack Hibb is a senior pastor there. He's heavily involved with the political thing in Washington, D.C. He's a good man of God. He taught about the title called The Rise of Islam. It revealed about the Muslim faith. Muslim is a group of people, the Middle Eastern group of people. That's the Muslim. And Islam is their religion. he taught me something I never thought. I decided I'm going to show that, present that DVD on Sunday morning, which I never done before. But it is so important to me, in my opinion, it is so important because more and more media is trying to show the Muslim, Islam is good, peaceful religion. And by the way, just for the side note, London mayor, he will do anything for Israel, Muslim people. There's not a thing that he reject when they ask for. And it's not the population-wise, Muslims are not even 90%. They are not even over half. Europe is just frightened by Muslims' presence. In France, they cannot do anything without the Muslims' permission. Do you know that? They are growing rapidly. I'm going to tell you this much. Islam is not increasing because of conversion. Islam is expanding because of the birth rate. They have a sheer population. They're fastest expanding religion in the world. Not by conversion, but by population. Anyway, I'm going to show that thing to you guys on probably June 1st. Okay? So, if you know anyone who do not know much about Islam, tell them to come to church on June 1st. In California, you will see in the DVD, they talk about Islam in the textbook as if it's one of the wonderful religions. It's not. And that's not the only thing that America is embracing. Well, we have a president candidate running around and declaring that he's not a Muslim. Okay, let's go to verse 4. So the Esther's maid and eunuch came and told her. And the queen was deeply distressed, and then she sent a garment to clothe Mordecai and to take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai to learn what was what and why this was. So Hathach went out to the Mordecai in the city square that was in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the sum of money that the Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasury to destroy the Jews. He also gave him a copy of a written decree for their destruction, which was given at the Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, and then he might command her to go into the king to make the supplication to him and plead before him for his people. So Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Mordecai not only knew all the fact and about the decree, and he also had a proof in his hand, so that Esther could read it by herself. And he urged her to talk to king on behalf of the Israeli people. Let's move on to the verse 10. Excuse me. Then Esther spoke to the Hathach, gave him the command for the Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's province know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except one to whom the kings hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's word, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther. I bet they had fun going back and forth. Why didn't they just text, right? or use a cell phone. Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. Verse 14, for if you remain completely silent at this time, would you note the next phrase, please? Relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from other places. Other places. But you and your house, father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. It's a common custom for any king to have a filter system and the kinds of gates guard that nobody can come to the inner court of the king, the throne room, unless that person is already pre-screened or authorized. Otherwise, anybody can come in and try to kill the king. Just like, nowadays, you can shake the hands of the president if you happen to be on the street and you can holler at him, stick your hands out. But still, guess who gets to be in between you and the president? Secret Service. Unless they said, okay, kind of step aside, you cannot shake hands of the president. You cannot go into White House or into the Oval Office unless you're authorized. I heard this cute story about the Larry King. He was invited to the White House, so he went in, and of course the Secret Service, they all knew him because they've seen his program. And this Secret Service guy says, well, Larry, we really like your program. Oh, that's great. And the Secret Service said, so he thought he's going to go in. He said, Secret Service guy said, ID please. Mordecai claimed that reminded Esther has three solemn facts. Number one, he told her that being a palace resident is no guarantee that she's going to be delivered from the death. It's not in your thing, but I'm just reading it to you because we just read that portion. Once Haman finds out that Esther is a Jew, guess what he will do? He will find a reason to kill her. Right? If everybody, all the Jews in that Persian kingdom was killed, there are 15 million of them, minus one person. Do you think he was sleep until that one person is dead? Yes, he won't sleep. Second thing I find is Mordecai reminded her that her silence would not prevent the deliverance from coming from some other source. Let me put it this way. The reference here is the providence of God, even the name of God is not mentioned. Knowing the Abrahamic covenant, what's the Abrahamic covenant? The covenant that God made with Abraham. What did he say? Your seed will be like a sand on the seashore. It will be numerous. It's like stars in the night sky. And I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. That's the covenant he made with Abraham. And God's going to keep that no matter what. And he said, if you can count the number of sand on the seashore, you'll be able to count the number of your seed. That many. So he made a covenant, knowing that Mordecai is knowing that this Abrahamic covenant, he had a faith in God that people of Israel would be protected from the annihilation. Even if it was not through Esther, it would be through some other means. So let me ask you this. Why would the relief and deliverance arise from another place, yet Esther and her relative will be killed? It's not a punishment. It's a punishment for her unwillingness to intercede for the people. To intercede for people. Let's go to James 4:17, please. We used this verse on Sunday morning. Actually, I didn't use this verse, but we were talking about that thing. James 4:17, please. You there yet? Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is what?
Sin.
What did I call it? Sin of what? Omission. Very good. When we know what to do and we don't do it, that's sin. And we call it sin of omission. Sin of commission is sin, the sin we commit. Okay? Third thing I find is Mordecai emphasized her being a palace as a queen was not an accident. Because God arranged the whole thing, including Esther becoming queen, as a part of his providential will. Any logical Jew would understand this. God created the whole thing. This reminds me of another incident in Israel history. It reminds me of Joseph. What happened to Joseph? When he was 17, he went out to see his brothers' whereabouts, and when they found him, what did they do? They threw him into the pit, and then when the caravan Ishmaelites, the slave trader, were coming, let's sell him, make money out of him, we are Jew, right? So they sold him for a few pennies. He ended up become servant, a slave of a Mr. Potiphar, the captain of the guard. And with a chain of events, he ended up become the second-in-command prime minister of Egypt. At that time, Egypt was a massive superpower country. And with that, because he interpreted the Pharaoh's, remember the dream, 7 year great harvest, followed by 7 year famine. So they prepared themselves, and it came to true. It came true, and the 7 year famine is coming, and the people is dying all around except Egypt, and the other country people realized that there is a food in the Egypt, so they came. Among those people who came to Egypt were the 10 brothers of his. They all stood in front of this Joseph, who don't look like a Hebrew anymore. Probably he had a shaved head, shaved face, and wearing the beautiful Egyptian clothes, and speaking fluently in Egyptian language, and speaking through the interpreter. So they never thought their brother is still alive, and not only that, he is the prime minister. That would be the last thing they had in mind. And they're just begging for the food. We want to buy food, and hats in their hand with a real polite position. Eventually, Joseph revealed his identity to his brother. And when he did that, he just gave him just about a heart attack to all of them, right? Their jaw dropped and still on the ground and don't know what to say, or whether they should pick up the jar and start to talk or cry and then saying, oh my goodness, I'm going to die right here. This is what Joseph said. Let's go to Genesis chapter 45. I love the way Joseph said. Genesis 45, verse 7 and 8. And God sent me before you to preserve the posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me the father to the Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and the ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Folks, this is the providential will of God. We can learn more about the basic truth of the God's providence from the Mordecai's comment, and something we can apply in our Christian lives. Number one, God has a divine purpose to accomplish in this war. He has a divine purpose. God's purpose involved Jews, Gentiles, noblemen, poor men, churches, individual and nations, and little group, small group, big group. His purpose touched the lives of the heads of the nations and common people, godly people, wicked people. There's nothing in this world that is outside of the influence of the purpose of God. Everything is within the realm of God's purpose. Second thing I find that we can apply for God's providence is God permits the wicked people to do evil things in this world. This is a very, very hard for me to understand. Great God, wonderful God, holy God allows evil things to happen. Does it mean they are the part of the cast? You know, in the movie, there's a good people, bad people, right? Good guy always look, huh? Yeah, yeah. And they're always good looking, and the bad guy's always bad looking, and then they always wear black, and the good guy's always wear white. Isn't that what we're supposed to be? Not anymore, though. Anyway, so after the show, this all is supposed to be like that, and it was rigged from the beginning. Does it mean God had a special role for those bad people and then just discard them? No. We're going to talk about that a little later. But let's continue. But he can work in and through unbelievers and his own people to accomplish his purpose. Third thing that I'd like to bring to your attention is God will accomplish his purpose even if his servant refuse to obey his will. This is another phenomenal thing that I have to say, wow, God. If you and I refuse to obey God, folks, he can get somebody else to do the job, and we will lose the reward and blessing, or he can discipline us until we surrender to his will. Let me make a quick example for that. A couple of them. Remember John Mark from Acts chapter 13? He went with the Apostle Paul and who else? No? Barnabas, exactly. Paul and Barnabas and John Mark went together at the beginning. And then John Mark wasn't, remember, John Mark was a young guy. And he left home and he kind of think about home. I miss my mommy. I want to go home. And he stick his thumb and start to say, I want my blankie. And so he went home. In chapter 16, what happened? No, chapter 16, we find God put Timothy in a replacement of John Mark. See what I'm saying? John Mark's supposed to go and do his thing, being a friend of, companion of Apostle Paul, and do his duty. But because he refused to obey, he simply lost his position. He was the one who lost the blessing. He is the one who lost the reward. Eventually he came around, he became a servant of the Apostle Paul. In 2 Timothy we find, bring John Mark to me, he's a blessing to me. Now, what about this situation? He can discipline us until we surrender to his will. Who would be the great example? The guy who did the first amphibious landing. The guy who did the submarine dive. Dive, dive, dive. Jonah. Remember he said, go to Nineveh. What did he do? I'm going the other way. Tarshish. End of Spain. Nineveh is over there. Tarshish is over there. End to end. So what did he do? He ran away from God. Whenever we go against the will of God, what happened? He go down and down and down. He went down to Joppa and went down to the bottom of the ship and went down from the ship to the bottom of the sea. on top of all, he had to pay the way to go down and down. Typical, isn't it? Whenever we go against the will of God, that's what happened to us. This, how far did he go? God brought this yellow submarine, right? And brought him all the way back and spit him out on the shore. And he had to walk another 600 miles with the seaweed wrapped around his head. It smelled like a whatever. And went to Nineveh. If we continue to disobey God, God will chase us down, make us to follow Him. Folks, when God isn't permitted to rule, He overrules. He always accomplishes His purposes. You with me? When you don't let God rule your life, sometimes He, not sometimes, every time, He overrules us. Only sovereign God. Okay, I'm going to give you time to write the thing down. Let me put it this way. I had the great privilege to lead a group of people from our church to the cruise to Alaska a few years ago. How many years ago? 6 years ago? 5 years ago? Something like that. We went to Alaska. Yeah, some people remember that kind of thing. I don't. Anyway, one thing, while I was on the ship, I can go up and down all these levels, right? I can go to the, where is the stern? Is the back of back? Okay, what's the, what you call the bow? Or starboard side, whatever the other side, left side or right side, right? They always come up with a different name. Anyway, I can go anywhere I want, correct? I can do whatever I want to do in the ship, right? Just because I do something different, does the ship change the course? And you're wondering, okay, Pastor, where are you going with that? I'm going here. Listen, please. Think about God's sovereign providence is a course of the ship. You can choose to do whatever you want to do while God is taking you to somewhere. You can obey, or you can be disobedient to God. God's going to take you to somewhere, no matter what. Is there going to be a good, wonderful journey? That's up to you. Or you can fight against God. I could go to the Alaska. What was the one of the place we went? Juneau? Okay. I own that city. Yeah, I could go there by riding on that nice ship, or I could ride in a little dinghy and back up to this ship with the rope attached, clung, clung like this, you know, being drowned, almost drowned in the seawater, cold seawater. I can choose either way, but I will end up in that place. God's providence will, God's purpose will not be changed because of our individual decision. It will go. It will accomplish His purpose. Only sovereign God is great enough to decree freedom of choice for man and woman. Only sovereign God could fulfill His wise and loving purpose in this world and make evil cooperate in producing good. Genesis 50:20 says, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about as it is this day, to save many people alive." The question is, folks, the question is not, is God in control of this world? But the question is God in control of my life because I let Him? Are we cooperating with Him so that we are part of the answer or not part of the problem? Guess who has a choice? We do. Guess who can enjoy the ride. We do. Guess who can make ourselves miserable? We do. Don't we say this kind of thing to our children, especially the teenagers? You can make yourself miserable or you can make yourself nice. It's your choice, right? We don't have to be hardened unbelievers like Haman to be a path addict and unconcerned about the condition of the world and the billions lost soul. Let's go back to five responses that I mentioned, okay? Five responses that I mentioned. Then I'm going to put that thing in our term. Like Haman and the king who completely ignored the condition of the Jew, would you go on your daily life without doing anything other than for yourself? You know, those two could have cared less about the 15 million people's lives. They were drinking, they're having their good old time. There are a lot of Christians, a lot of born-again Christians would not do a thing for the lost soul. Their fire insurance is paid up, so why would they care? They're going to wait on the way to heaven. Why would they care, right? But we should care. Second thing I find is like the people of the capital city who were perplexed and didn't know what to do. Would you just look at each other and don't know what to do? Or would you come up with an idea or ask God to show your way? Again, our choice. The Queen Esther knew nothing about the danger she and her people faced. None of the born-again believers in America claimed that they didn't know what needed to be done for the salvation of around us and around the world. See, we all know, if you've been attending church any given length of time, you know there are people who are dying around the world without Jesus. What are you going to do about it? Fourth point I'd like to make it to you is that the Jews in the various provinces began to fast and mourn, and they would you cry out to the Lord in your prayer and fasting? Fifth response. Like Mordecai, who was able to do anything about the horror by trusting God to guide him, would you step out of your comfort zone and make yourself available to God? I'm going to put that thing in our term. Really, our term. Calvary Chapel of Sorry, the term. Saturday, May 17th, our Pastor Jack is going to lead the team down to the Mexico New Creation. Our sister ministry in Nogales, Mexico. And we're going to take some stuff there, and we're going to help them. Can you be a part of it? Can you be a part of that team? Can you help them out? At least if you cannot go there, can you assist them? Instead of saying, I'm not doing anything, I'm doing other things. Well, good for you. I'm not trying to manipulate you to do something. Ask yourself, is there anything that I can do, not necessarily just for this trip, is there anything I can do to bring people to Christ? It doesn't have to be the church level. It can be your individual level. What do you do for your neighbor? Do you talk to them about Jesus? What do you do with your person who exercises together around the Rancho Sarita or around wherever you live? Do you talk to them about Jesus? I'm not asking you to pound them with the Bible. It doesn't work. Yes, I tried it. Let's go for the last three verses. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maid and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Folks, this is a very important thing. Fasting and prayer are frequently found in together in the scripture because fasting is a preparation for the concentrated and humble prayer. On itself, fasting does not guarantee. There's no guarantee that God will bless him. Just because we fast, that doesn't mean God's going to bless. It's not one of those, you know, special thing that God to move God. Because fasting must be accompanied by the sincere humility and brokenness before the Lord. If fasting is only a formal religious ritual, it accomplishes no spiritual purpose other than the empty stomach and this prideful heart. I've seen people who tell me that they've been fasting, and they look, make sure I understand they've been fasting. It's not necessary to do that. It's fasting is between you and God, right? I believe that Esther was determined to follow God and obey God, even if it cost her own life. That's obedient heart. Let's make three applications. Number one, we cannot be neutral when the human lives are at stake. This is why we not only must pray to the Lord, but also we must voice our opinion with the petitions and the both regarding the abortion and our children's education. I send an important message. So when you receive email, instead of junk it or trash it, read it at least, okay? A lot of times I forward information that comes from the American Family Association or that comes from the Focus on the Family. That's a very vital to our Christian faith. That we must do something about it. For example, McDonald's is now supporting the homosexuality program. And Marriott, oh, they're paying for the 1-800 calls. 1-800 calls, you know, toll-free number for the gay organization. They're supporting them financially. And also they're helping them, they do the TV commercial for the gay TV stations. And Marriott, you know, they used to have Gideon Bibles in the drawer, right? They took them all out. They replaced with the porno material inside. Uh-huh. So, that's the information I got from the Focus on the Family, so I forwarded to you guys. So, send the email to the Marriott people. I'm not going to use your Marriott until you guys change. Ford was supporting homosexuality strong. And so the American Family Association asked a lot of Christians to boycott that. And we did for 2 years. And ever since the boycott happened, their sales went down every quarter. They're losing their butt. And finally they gave up and they stopped supporting gays. Okay, so when I send the email to you, please look at it. And if you are not receiving email from me, give me the email address so I can send it to you. If you and I refuse to obey, he can get somebody else to do the job. We will lose the reward and blessing, or he will discipline us until we surrender to his will. It's not going to be pretty sad if God had to push his way. Remember what I said on Sunday morning? God's millstone turns very slowly, but he grinds it exceedingly fine. When God isn't permitted to rule, he overrules. He always accomplishes his purpose. Let's stand up and pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the time together. Let us be obedient to you and willing to be used by you for your purpose alone. So you alone receive glory and honor and praise. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.